Hi everyone, welcome to Amperegy Advocacy Media. This is the Journey Series podcast. My name is Mark. I'm a co-host. I'm a brown man, bald, used to have a black and white beard. I'm wearing black glasses and got a dark blue shirt with some black in it. And we're coming to you from our home office today.
And I'm Crystal. I'm the other co-host. Today I have on a red and white shirt with a black top. And I'm a white woman with brown hair and brown eyes. And I have on red glasses.
And today on Journeys, we're speaking with Annie Strait, who is the grassroots advocacy manager at the United Spinal Association. She's going to tell us about her journey and what she's working on. Hi, Annie.
Hi.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. I am a white female with dark brown hair just past my chin. I'm wearing dark brown glasses and a white t-shirt. I have dark brown eyes, a lot of dark brown going on, and I also am a power wheelchair user.
Great. So feel free to tell us any as much as you want to about your journey and how you got to this point.
All right. Well, I guess the best place to start is back on the onset of my spinal cord injury. And I was at a pool at my college graduation back in 2005. Just graduated with a degree in interior design and was hired as a project manager and was supposed to start the following week. When I dove in the pool, I did a shallow dive and I never hit the bottom of the pool. My neck just snapped back funny when I hit the water, which crushed my C5 vertebrae. So it caused swelling around my spinal cord, which is the cause of my paralysis. So, like I said, that was about 18 years ago. And it's been quite a journey. It's hard to believe it's been 18 years. But after my accident, I went through 8 weeks of inpatient rehabilitation. Pretty much having to relearn how to do everything from talking, swallowing. I had a trach. You have this body that doesn't respond like it used to, so it's a huge change. So when I got back home that first year, it really took me a bit to want to feel comfortable going out to eat. Before my accident, I was very independent, very social, was always doing stuff with friends. And so, that aspect of my life I was really missing. But I got through that first year, decided to go back to school to get my teaching degree. So I went to Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, which is where I am. I'm located in a little north of Fort Wayne, Indiana right now. I work remotely from home, but went back to school, got my teaching degree, and did my student teaching, and I loved it. I had a degree in social studies education for high school. So I had a semester of student teaching with juniors and seniors, which I loved. They were great kids, and I really think it worked out so well because I had to form a different type of relationship with the students. I had to have help passing out papers. I had to have help drawing on the board. Sometimes I had to have help getting their attention because I couldn't yell that loud. So it was great and I loved it. And mentally I was fine. I could do it all. But physically, my body, it was hard on my body with having to get up at about 4 a.m. every morning, working all day, working into the evening, which teachers do, have a lot of behind the scenes work. My body was just, I was in a lot of pain and it just unfortunately did not work out. So I did complete my student teaching and got my degree. But then I went into a youth development program at the YMCA. So I still was able to work with kids. I did that for probably about a year and a half, which I loved. It was shorter hours. I think it was like 4 hours a day. So I was able to get up and move around. And we worked with kids after school, helping them with homework and tutoring and just doing activities with them. And it's a great program and they still do it. But then I dove into writing children's books. That was something I'd been wanting to do, something people had been pushing me to do. And I was just having trouble figuring out how I was going to write them. I didn't know what characters I wanted, what I wanted to write about. And a friend gave me the idea to use dogs. So I have 5 books out now. And the very first one was called Scooter and His Scoot Scoot. And I believe that was published in 2016. And they're all rhyming children's picture books, probably for preschool to third grade. And this first book I wrote was, I always say it's me if I was in a dog form. It's about a dog whose back legs don't work. So he has his wheels. And I wrote it because I did a lot of speaking engagements for older audiences, high school and up, but I wanted to reach younger kids. So with this book, I wrote it, and then I was going into schools and around central Indiana at the time. I lived down there, and going in and reading the story, having them ask questions about the story, about being an author, and then having them ask questions about my wheelchair and you know, how I do things. And I wanted them to be exposed to that, to be able to answer all their questions. You know, and then I kept coming up with ideas for books. So it snowballed into my 5th book that just came out this past summer that I collaborated with someone on. And it is a rhyming children's picture book to help children cope with and understand when they have a relative who has Alzheimer's disease. So it was really fun to collaborate. I collaborated with Barbara Backgard, who is actually the co-founder of Vera Bradley. She lives on the same lake that I do up here in Indiana. And we just met one day when I was rolling around the lake and became good friends. And she kind of put this opportunity in front of me to write this book with her. And I was like, yeah, I'd love to. So we wrote the book. And I've done a few book signing events. I had one a couple weekends ago, and I do a lot of promoting on social media. I haven't done very many speaking engagements ever since COVID. But during COVID, I did a lot of online readings for kids. And I've done a few of online presentations for different groups. So in the midst of all that, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, because I was doing the book work, but I still had some time on my hands. And I decided to go and get my medical billing and coding certificate because, you know, it's an opportunity where you could work from home. This was before COVID, before working from home was a thing. So I got my certificate, and I cannot tell you how many applications I filled out. It was over 50, and I couldn't get a job for one. Nobody said working from home was, they could do that. And two, I had to have experience. And I'm like, well, I can't get experience if I, you know, nobody will hire me. So I was in the midst of dealing with all that. COVID started to come around. And then a friend of my older brother's presented me with this opportunity of an opening at United Spinal Association. I have a blog and I do a lot of writing, and he knew I did that and did a lot of speaking engagements. And so I read through this job description for grassroots advocacy manager. And, you know, I wasn't familiar with a lot on the policy side, but I was, you know, very comfortable with, you know, managing advocates, managing people, organizing, presenting and talking. And I learned quickly. So I've been with United Spinal now for a little over 3 years, and I've learned so much. Our advocacy network, we just started our advocacy network when I started, which was around July of 2020. And it was very small. We started at zero. So our whole goal was we wanted people to sign up. We wanted people who were motivated, that were going to be responsive, to be advocates. And now we are approaching 2,000 registered advocates. I think we have a little over 1,900, and our goal is to get 2,000 by the end of the year. So my colleague, Steve Lieberman, who is the Director of Advocacy and Policy at United Spinal, has worked very hard on this. We first called it district mobilization, but the whole goal for our advocacy network is we want registered advocates in all 435 congressional districts in the United States. Right now we have 428 of the 435. So we've only got a few more to go. We're getting there. And our next step will be, we want a minimum of 5 registered advocates in each of these districts. So our goal is just to continue to grow and expand. And it's really helped. We've worked on the programming at United Spinal, and I think it's really brought in a really diverse group of people that work really well and really hard and are committed to making change for the disability community. I'm not sure if you want me to go into a little more about the advocacy program at United
Spinal. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, it was, like I said, we started the advocacy network back in July of 2020, and we kind of revamped it a couple years ago. We wanted to provide various opportunities for advocates to be involved. If you're a new advocate and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, we provide this monthly advocacy live. It's the third Tuesday of every month. And we alternate times each month from 1 at 1 and 5 p.m. Eastern time, so we can try to get our advocates on the West Coast included also with the time change. But it's an open forum. Steve and I are there to kind of facilitate and answer questions, but it's an open forum where advocates from all over the country come into this Zoom call, and they just discuss what they're doing if they have questions. Because our whole goal is to engage and collaborate all our advocates, whether they're in California or Florida, because even though you're across the country from one another, you may be working on the same issue, or you may be able to answer questions or provide a templates or something to help somebody. So that has really grown. We've been doing that for 2 years, maybe. It's flown by, but we usually monthly get between 35 and 50 advocates on the call a month. So, and a lot of times it runs over, but we get pretty passionate about these issues and needing change. And one thing that has come out of the advocacy live events is one topic that comes up a lot is accessible parking. Everybody has had issues with accessible parking, and yes, everybody. And so we decided we wanted to start some working groups for specific topics. And we started the accessible parking working group. And then we have 4 more. So we have 5 altogether. So we have accessible parking, outdoor access, emergency preparedness, care support, and accessible transportation. And on our website, there's a form you can fill out. You can join any or all. We have some advocates that are in 1. We have some advocates that are in all 5. And they meet monthly. And what we've done over the past few months is the advocates, the group members, they compile information so we can create resources to provide for the disability community. This October, our emergency preparedness working group, I got experiences and suggestions and resources to prepare a resource for wildfire preparedness. The emergency preparedness group has created a resource for hurricane preparedness. Some other ones from the other working groups are accessible camping, beach access and mobility, and there's another one in there. Our care support working group has created a really great resource on finding, hiring, and keeping caregivers and PCAs, which is a national crisis all over the United States. So we have that resource, and next month we're creating a resource for the care support group, and it's going to be things we want our caregivers to know before they even step foot through our door. You know, certain trainings that are needed, certain aspects of, you know, spinal cord injuries. And so we're gathering up all that information. And what I do is I take all that information the members, you know, give us, and I put it together, and it's posted on the website. And we will soon just have a working group resource page where you can click on it and they can be found easily there. Right now they're in with all the other United Spinal blogs. So we're really, really happy with our working group members and, you know, these resources that we're creating that I think really, really help. And we just are trying to find ways to get the resources out there, especially emergency preparedness, because, you know, there's in the past, you know, especially doing research for, you know, writing that resource, it's devastating what happens when you don't plan ahead for any type of disaster. So that's something we really, really push. And we already have our Ready to Roll program at United Spinal, which is an emergency preparedness program that's provided some resources and links for all different types of emergency preparedness. Some of the other programming that we have is once a month, I do a Meet an Advocate live stream that streams directly to the United Spinal Association Advocacy Network Facebook page. And actually, my one for this month is tomorrow. And I'm bringing in an advocate. He used to be in the military. I think he said 11 years. And he now works with drones. And he gave a great presentation at our accessible parking working group meeting, how these drones can help. He can fly a drone and he can identify all of the accessible parking spaces and the curb cutouts. And, you know, if sidewalks can't be accessed, and it was incredible, you know, because, you know, accessible parking, like I said, is just a hot button topic. And it was really neat how this drone can fly and identify all of the spaces and where they are located. So we had a great time listening to his presentation. I'm really excited to have him on tomorrow and talk about all he's done. He is a quadriplegic also. He was in a snowboarding accident. So he's helped people with all levels of injury work with flying drones also. So yeah, it's a very interesting topic. And I've been bringing these advocates on since I really started back in September of 2020. And I like to highlight the work that advocates are doing. And I mainly just find it through social media, or I'm listening and talking with advocates on a daily basis, because my position as grassroots advocacy manager is I manage our advocates across the US. And I'm kind of the go-between between United Spinal and National. I provide the information to all of our, you know, our advocates and our advocacy coordinators, and they relay it to all their chapters. So it's a timeline of kind of how the process works. But it's great working with Steve. He used to work on the Hill for 10 years. So he's got that experience. So it's really helpful to have somebody that's been on that side, especially when we do our virtual advocacy days or our role on Capitol Hill, which is where we actually go to DC. This past summer, we flew in around 100 advocates, and I believe we had around 160 meetings with members of Congress. So
that's
a lot of meetings. And there were, you know, we usually only cover three issues, because when you go into these meetings, sometimes you only have 10, 15 minutes, sometimes half an hour. It really depends. Sometimes you're talking to the staff instead of the actual member of Congress, but that's just as important, because you have to convince that staff that what you're talking about is important enough for them to relay it to the member of Congress. So I've learned a lot. And, you know, we have an education day for our role on Capitol Hill and our virtual advocacy days, because a lot of the advocates have never done anything like that before. So they are extremely, some are very intimidated by going to speaking to these members of Congress. And one thing that Steve and I like to emphasize is one of the best forms of advocacy is to share your story. And so I was like, when I do my presentations and talk to groups about advocacy, I was like, I was an advocate before I even knew I was an advocate, because I've shared my story to many people. And that really helps people relate when they hear that personal aspect. You may be talking to a member of Congress and they're like, oh, you know, I have a cousin who's in a wheelchair. You know, it may just help them click more and help them relate more. So we always try to tell them that, and nobody knows your story better than you do. So I think it really helps. And we really try to prepare the advocates, and on that education day, and we run through all the information, and United Spinal puts a lot of work into this event. And then we also have our virtual advocacy day, which is pretty much the same thing, but we're of course doing it remotely. And we had one virtual advocacy day last year, and we will have one this year, maybe, and maybe two. It depends. I don't think any of that is buckled down quite yet.
You were talking about, you know, sharing your story, and I found that that is definitely true, but it takes a particular kind of audience or listener to really be empathetic and really take in what you're saying and not just passive aggressively kind of, oh, this, okay, yeah, I get that. And just, you know, they're listening, but they're not taking it in and yes, really considering it. So it takes, you know, it's hard. And, you know, when you can read the room and realize that that audience is not really doing that, yeah, then you're not going to fully share that story. You know, yes, they're not really listening. So,
yes, luckily I've not run into that very much that I know of. There may have been somebody I was talking to who was, you know, didn't care quite as much as somebody else, but, you know, I was sharing my story anyways. And yeah, I think you do have to, feel the room. You have to know your audience, cater to your audience. That's another thing we kind of stress.
Well, not only that, Mark and I have learned through this whole process, you know, you really have to build your circle, you know, yes, and yes, find the people that appreciate you and want to celebrate you and hear your story and care about the issues and things like that.
Yes.
You know, and once you have that, then you have a lot more support and a lot more, you know, your ability to do things.
Yes. You know, and that's why Steve and I are always, you know, trying to push to register as a advocate for United Spinal. It's a very simple form on the website, and you're not taking on any huge commitments. One of the main things that our registered advocates get are, they're called action alerts, and it's for policy and issues that we want our members of Congress to be aware of. And they are sent, these action alerts are sent to all of our registered advocates, and all the registered advocates have to do is fill in their information. They can provide a personal story that applies to whatever policy or issue is being discussed, and they hit send and off it goes. You know, it takes 5 minutes. And that Steve always is emphasizing how important that is, and why expanding this network and continually growing is so important, because it really change won't be made and differences won't be made if there are not a lot of these action alerts sent out. If a member of Congress only gets five of them, they're, right, you know, it's not going to make a dent. So when we get, I think one of our most popular ones was one involved with air travel, which is another, you know, hot button topic that with wheelchairs being damaged, lost, people being dropped and injured. And so that action alert did really well. And it was actually one of the issues that we discussed at our role on Capitol Hill this past June in Washington. And actually one of our advocates who was flying in, her wheelchair got broke on the way to DC. So luckily it wasn't broke to the point where she couldn't use it, but still it was a brand new wheelchair. And it's just, yeah, it's just, it's something that we're working on, and it's going to take time, which, you know, the type of advocacy we do, it does take time, but when changes are made, they stick, you know, because it changes policy. And we also try to explain that to our advocates, because you can get burnt out, you know, if you're constantly working and not getting anywhere. But, you know, eventually down the line, you will get somewhere. It's happened just with me working the 3 years at United Spinal, things have changed. And it really shows how important the advocacy network is on getting the message out there to our members of Congress and the people who we need to change the policy.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. We like to have different perspectives and different people, you know, different areas on this, on here, so that we can get out to, and then our story too, we'd like to incorporate that so that we can kind of normalize the disability issues, and also they can hear from your side, like the you know, and an organization, you know, and the advocacy of that. And so I think if people are able to hear the whole, you know, around the table, it's going to help. We were talking earlier about, you know, just being able to empathize in a situation. Well, that's going to be hard to do if you don't have that lived experiences. So if you're at least able to listen to a thing like this, you know, or other podcasts, you know, whatever, then at least you're empathetic enough to understand the issues just listening to it.
Yes, and I love podcasts like this. I've been on a few different ones, and I think it's a great way to just get the message out there. I mean, we try to reach advocates and members of the disability community any way possible. And we also try to emphasize that to be a registered advocate for United Spinal, you do not have to have a disability. You do not have to be in a wheelchair. We just want people who care about the disability community. I always tell people, my whole family is signed up. You know, I have friends that are signed up, you know, and because Steve, you know, my colleague always says, when those members of Congress receive those action alerts, they can't see who's on the other side of the computer. They just know it's somebody who cares and is bringing this policy or this issue to their attention. So we always try to emphasize that, because I feel like sometimes, you know, people think, well, I don't have a disability, so I can't register as an advocate, but not true at all. Not true at all.
I think that's a very important thing to have, like, historically big movements that actually make change have had diverse members, like, if we're talking about racism, then everyone was included, and people who were in power are more likely to listen to people who were kind of like them, yes, like saying that you should get on board with this. Whereas if it's only one certain type of people, it's much easier to dismiss them.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's why, you know, when we do our roll on Capitol Hill and you have 100 advocates rolling around in wheelchairs all over the Capitol, And we all wear orange. That's the color for United Spinal. And it's like a flood of orange everywhere you go. It was really neat. And it was actually my first role on Capitol Hill, because when I was hired on, it was in the midst of COVID. So everything was virtual. So I finally had the chance to, you know, to go. And it really hit me when the whole group got in front of the Capitol building to take a photo. And there was so many of us. I swore it took an hour. It's not easy to organize that many wheelchairs for a group photo. So it's the banner on our Facebook page. And I still have my badge hanging on the wall here, because it reminds me, you know, yes, we did our work at Roll on Capitol Hill, but we still have work to do at home. You can't stop after that. That was just kind of a catapulting us, you know, to these issues that we're trying to raise more awareness. But yeah, it's a great event. And I believe that was the 12th year that was the 12th role in Capitol Hill.
You know, kind of to, like his phrase, circle the wagons back. Probably because we're in Texas and it just feels right.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah.
You said your accident was 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that in your previous life experience that sort of prepared you for that?
Yes. Or
you felt in hindsight prepared you?
Yes, I like this question. I get asked that a lot. Well, when I was doing my speaking engagements and before my accident, I was very athletic. I was very involved with sports, and softball, fast pitch softball was my favorite sport. And I was very competitive. And I think that competitive nature really, it doesn't go away. And I think that's really helped me to push through, because, you know, everybody's going to have their hard days, and it takes a lot. You know, having a spinal cord injury is not easy. I think one of the hardest things is that you lose a lot of independence, and it's trying to figure out how to have any independence as much as possible. And I think that competitive nature really helps me every day. Especially with this job also, with United Spinal Association. I always say my form of advocacy is, my two words are persistence and transparency. And I think that persistence, that competitive part of me, doesn't give up. And I know it's going to be kind of a hard battle, but you know, it could have some great results. And I think the more transparent you are about your story, about what you've been through, even if it's hard to talk about, I think that really can open up so many opportunities and help. You may help someone who's listening that may can relate to that. And it's gotten easier, you know, over every time. I used, you know, when I first started doing these speaking engagements, it was hard. My voice was shaky. But now, you know, I enjoy sharing my story. I enjoy writing about it. It's sometimes even therapeutic, you know, to share. And, I think that competitive nature has really, really helped me. So my parents say I'm still pretty competitive. My best friend says I'm funnier now. So I don't know if that was a compliment or not, but I'll take it. I'll take it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's important to keep that competitive, ambitious thing, because lots of people, I mean, if they're in our position, are, if you have a certain insecurity or a certain amount of nervous, and if you give up at the outset, maybe you might not get to where you could be.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was changing.
I was going to say, I think, you know, that competitive nature helped me with this, when this opportunity kind of, I say literally, fell into my lap, which doesn't happen often, because I was unsure about it, because there were parts of the job that I didn't feel I was very strong at. But you know, I've always been one that if an opportunity is put in front of me, you know, I'll do everything I can to take that on. And so I did, and I was like, here I sit. And you know, the advocacy network has grown and we're doing well. And it's opened my world to the disability community, which I'm very proud to be part of this community, because I think it is full of people who are dedicated and strong and can adapt and don't give up, and are very good at just bringing new ideas and sharing their story. And I truly love being a part of that, and meeting all these people I wouldn't have if I hadn't have started my position at United Spinal.
Yeah. In the work we do and the people we've talked to, you know, the opportunities are, you know, can be very despairing. There's sections of the world where the equality and the opportunity to have the better rehabilitation and stuff like that, and the support systems in place for them are not there. So they're not able to connect with people like you. What would you say to them?
Well, I wanted to mention, and you brought that up and it made me remember this, that, you know, we're called United Spinal Association, but it's not just for people who have spinal cord injuries or spinal cord diseases or disorders. It's all wheelchair users that we are fighting for. And we do have a lot of our members who live out in these rural areas where there's nothing, there's no accessible transportation, you know, and United Spinal provides multiple support groups, which can be very beneficial with just getting information. And even, like I said, the Advocacy Live, we've had people come in there and explain, you know, I live, you know, out in the middle of nowhere in Montana, and I need help with this and so and so and so and so. And we have people piping in, you know, like, try this or try this. And I think for those people who are in those situations, if you can find a way to connect, whether it's through a support group or, you know, becoming a member of an organization such as, there's so many different organizations out there that do great work. But if you can become a member, there's so many resources out there, which I have learned. You know, when I click on the Resource Center for United Spinal, I'm kind of blown away. I'm like, okay, there's a lot here. So thank goodness we have people who run the Resource Center that are so knowledgeable that can direct us. But the resources are out there. And yes, there's certain areas where it's going to be very difficult to get certain things, to get caregiving. I'm in Indiana, but I live on a lake, which a lot of people are like, I thought it was only cornfields in Indiana, but I'm up in the northern right corner, and it's like a hidden gem. I live in a county where there's 101 lakes. And my family had this property, and we used to come up here on the weekends before my accident. And then, you know, I had my diving accident, and we had to kind of modify our home. We built a new home that's fully accessible for me. But, you know, I used to live down in central Indiana, right outside Indianapolis. And I had to move up here permanently because I could not find caregivers in central Indiana and in Indianapolis. So I came up here, and I have some caregivers, and I have a group of nurses now that have followed me, because some home health companies have let me go because they said, we can't, you know, cover your hours, or they're getting audited, or who knows why. There's multiple reasons. But my nurses have followed me to different companies. They've got That's hired nice. On. Yeah, they've gotten hired on. Many times. And it's not a easy process, you know, to get hired on. It's a long process. So I'm very appreciative of my nurses, and I know I'm lucky. I know my case is kind of rare. So, you know, that's why we have this care support working group. And in January, we're going to actually put on a care support webinar, and it's going to be all about, it's finding, hiring, training, and retaining nurses. We're going to bring in advocates that have had some great experiences and have really good suggestions and tips. We're actually bringing in, my nurse is going to be on, and she's going to be talking, because we want their aspect also from their side, because, you know, a lot of these home health agencies, you know, they don't pay the caregivers enough. That's one of the main problems. And I know I'm lucky enough, my nurses are very protective of me, and I've formed a great relationship. But we always say, you know, when some people have to hire on their own, pay out of pocket. And when you do that, it's pretty much, you're a manager, you know, you take on the manager role of your nurses, and you'll have to learn a lot of stuff on, you know, you have to, they always say never hire one you can't fire. That's something that's always stuck with me. So, you know, we're really trying to get suggestions and tips and do as much as we can, you know, to change policy and, across the country, because it's a crisis that's going on everywhere. We hear from a lot of people about their caregiving issues.
I bet.
Yeah. And I mean, we certainly have there are a lot of issues here we have to deal with, but sometimes we wonder how people in other countries that aren't quite up to the same speed as we are, as far as like development goes, like technologically, or they're still maybe war torn or whatever. How did they even get by?
I know. You know, I often think about that. United Spinal mainly deals with United States, but we are fully aware that, you know, there's issues all over the world. And when I see these devastating things on the news, and I'm like, how are those with disabilities getting out? How are they getting help? How are they getting care and medication? And it's, I just want to fix it. That's all I want to do. But my mom tells me I can't fix the world. And I said, well, I'm trying. I'm going to keep trying. So, yeah, I mean, we're trying to, you know, we want to change how people view the disability community. One thing about United Spinal is many of the employees there have a disability, which is great. And it's an organization that's really great to work for, because they understand when there's issues that arise due to a spinal cord injury, whether it's a pressure sore, or, you know, you're dealing with whatever, blood pressure, you know, that they understand that those things arise, and that I may need a day off with little notice. But knock on wood, I'm pretty healthy. So just got my COVID and my flu vaccination yesterday, and it didn't knock me down. So I'm happy. I'm very happy.
Do you have anything coming up?
Well, tomorrow I have the live stream that's going to be streaming directly, and that's at noon Eastern time on the United Spinal Association Advocacy Network Facebook page. You know, and we all the links I sent, you know, I think I sent links for the advocacy live and all the working groups, so if people are interested. And and then you have my email. So I want people, if they have questions, email me. That's what I'm here for. If I can't answer the question, I've got a great group of people I work with that somebody will know the answer. So, yeah, if anybody ever has any questions, please email me.
Great. Well, thank you, Annie, for being here and taking the time to speak with us.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. It's been a while since I've been able to share my whole story. So I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate what you both are doing and getting voices out there that need to be heard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Have a good day.
Have a good evening.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.